is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck in for Jane Lindholm, and today we're going over results from yesterday's primary elections. With the governor and lieutenant governor's job both up for grabs in a number of hotly contested House and Senate races across the state, this election was much harder to predict, which made it a lot more interesting to cover. Let's take a listen to gubernatorial candidates Phil Scott and Sue Minter as they addressed their jubilant supporters last night.
When I'm governor, we're going to restore faith and trust in state government by focusing on the fundamentals of a strong economy, never, never overpromising, and always following through. That's what Vermonters deserve, and that's what we're going to give them.
Vermont has never stopped being great, and we do not need to slow down. We need to charge forward to the future. On to November!
Phil Scott came out ahead of Bruce Lisman in the GOP's gubernatorial race, and as you heard, Sue Minter was celebrating her victory in the Democratic primary, beating Matt Dunn and Peter Galbraith. And David Zuckerman came out victorious in the Democratic primary race for lieutenant governor, beating out Shap Smith and Keisha Rahm. So it will be Zuckerman taking on Republican Randy Brock in November. We'll talk with the winners of those primary races today on Vermont Edition, but first I'm going to welcome VPR's Bob Kinzel to the program to provide some context to all these races. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Nina.
So, voters, we'd also love your input today. What issues or issues decided your vote? And did you change your mind during this campaign? You can call us and join the conversation at 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Bob, I want to start by talking about voter turnout. Primary races in August can often be kind of a snooze, and many people are on vacation. How was voter turnout yesterday?
Nina, voter turnout was very good. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, a lot of political observers thought voter turnout was going to be down around 10 or 12% because this is the first year that we've held the primary on the second Tuesday in August. For the past three primary elections, it was the fourth Tuesday in August. And before 2010, it was the second Tuesday in September. And Secretary of State Jim Condos argued that voter turnout in a primary is really directly related to the number of highly contested statewide races. And he looked back at the last 20 years, and he's absolutely right. In 2000, the turnout was 27%. That was a big contest on the Republican side for governor between Bill Muebe and Ruth Dwyer.
Right, right.
Remember that? In 2010, it was 23%. That was triggered by a five-way race for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. And just to put it in context, in 2008, there were virtually no contested statewide races. The turnout was 6%. Now, last night, it looks like the turnout was going to be about 26%.
Wow.
So I think Secretary Condos, you know, really did have it right. It's not the date. It's not the fact that it's early August, late August, early September. What matters is, are there contested primaries? And yesterday we had three.
Well, and let's talk about some of those contested races. One of the most hotly contested of them all was the Democratic gubernatorial primary. Sue Minter came out well ahead of Matt Dunn, 51% to 38%. Peter Galbraith got 9% of the vote. A lot of folks thought that race would have been closer. Bob, what are your thoughts concerning the final tally?
Well, I would agree that a lot of people thought it would be down in the 6, 7, 8% range. But I think what we saw in terms of turnout, just linking to that, that the Minter campaign really won the ground game, as it's called. You know, they went out and identified voters. They got them to the polls. They were incredibly well organized. And these are the kinds of things you don't necessarily see when you're covering a campaign. You know, we focus on issues and whatnot. We don't see the behind-the-scenes work. And I think they were just superbly organized. They made a lot of phone calls. They identified voters. They knew who they wanted to get out. On election day, they called these people sometimes two and three times. Did you vote? We really need you. So I think the ground game for Sue Minter is one reason that she won by so much.
Well, and that race also had some really crazy twists and turns in the last week that kind of made it more exciting, I think, for the press. But I'm wondering what voters were thinking if they were switching their minds. You had Peter Galbraith coming out swinging with allegations that Dunn and Minter were taking advantage of big money from out of state. I'm wondering, Bob, from your perspective, that argument, was that a bigger deal for the press, or do you think it resonated with voters?
You know, I'm not really sure how people feel about outside money in Vermont politics. I don't think it was a huge factor because we saw Matt Dunn doing it. We also saw a super PAC supporting Sue Minter. And if we look at Peter Galbraith's vote, he got about 9% of the vote yesterday. So it doesn't seem like there's this huge fervor to ban outside money or at least be negative about it. But I think the whole issue of wind in the last week or 10 days really made a big difference. I'm not sure it turned the election because Minter won by so much, but I think it gave her a margin of victory that a week ago we might not have expected.
And Bob, when you're talking about wind, let's remind listeners you're talking about the fact that Matt Dunn came out kind of last minute with a policy statement saying he felt communities should have veto power on local wind projects. That's what kind of caused a lot of the consternation among the pro-alternative energy set.
That's exactly right. And, you know, he said he was merely clarifying what he had said all along. But if you look back at his comments that he's made in the last couple of months, you never really see veto power for towns in his comments. And it really did set off environmentalists who decided to leave his campaign and support Sue Minter, Bill McKibben being the largest person to do that. And, you know, you have to scratch your head and wonder, you know, what was Matt Dunn thinking? I mean, he clearly made an effort to say that towns should have veto power. And some people thought he was trying to take some support away from Peter Galbraith, who supports an outright ban. And, you know, Dunn was really trying to thread a very difficult needle. And in the end, he spent the last week trying to explain what his position was. And for a politician, especially in the last week, that's something you don't want to have to be able to do.
Well, that seemed to resonate with Mark, who wrote into Vermont Edition, Matt Dunn's apparent desperation to become the Democratic candidate for governor seems to have backfired on him, flip-flopping on wind at the last minute and massive and conveniently timed super PAC outlays showed that Dunn wanted to win at all costs. So it seems like those two issues really did resonate with some voters. But Sue Minter is on the line with us, and I'd like to bring her into the conversation. First off, Sue Minter, congratulations.
Thanks so much, Nina. It's great to be here talking with you today.
Well, the Democratic gubernatorial primary race has been a close one, and I heard you describe your battle with Matt Dunn and Peter Galbraith as a tussle, quote-unquote, with brothers. So I'm wondering, when did you feel like you had won that tussle?
Well, you never take a single vote for granted, so we worked incredibly hard until the polls closed. As you heard, we had many, many volunteers all over the state identifying voters for months. We had 110,000 calls. And in the last week, we actually have knocked on over 5,000 doors. So we did that right up until the polls closed. I do feel that in the final days, as I was making phone calls and door knocking, I did have a sense of momentum, a sense that people were excited by my candidacy. I think, you know, we are also talking about very important issues that resonate with Vermonters, and they know I've really got plans to really take us into the future.
Surprised were you by the final numbers? Were you
surprised?
I was surprised.
I was certainly pleased. And most of all, I feel really honored that so many Vermonters support what I have done and what I plan to do to move the state forward. I mean, you know, I've been all around this state meeting with literally thousands of Vermonters and learning about their challenges, thinking about our opportunities, and really developing plans to help grow greater economic opportunity. I want to make sure we can get tuition-free community and technical college so young people have a path to livable wage jobs. And I'm going to stand strong as an environmental steward, fighting for clean water and a clean green energy future.
Well, go ahead. Finish the thought.
Well, I wanted to also mention gun safety. This is an issue that I took an early strong stance on, and I believe that many people appreciated that someone is finally raising this important issue as something we need to address in our state with common sense gun safety legislation, background checks for all gun sales.
I want to go back to the alternative energy issue, specifically where to put wind power projects. That as Bob was talking about, became a big issue in the last few weeks of this campaign. Many Vermonters do feel passionately about their ridgelines. How worried are you that the issue of ridgeline wind development will become even more divisive come November?
Well, I think what we're working to do is reduce the divisiveness by getting a process to engage communities and regions in the planning process. I am a planner, and I've worked on many difficult siting issues, and of course, this is one of statewide significance. But when we bring Vermonters' voices to the table and engage them and give them access to having input, I believe it really helps reduce what's happening now, which is really battles between developers and communities. So we have to be thinking about how we engage communities and looking forward to the first steps of implementing the siting bill that passed the legislature this past year.
Just quickly, do you get a few days off before the push to November sets in?
No, I don't. We just had a wonderful unity rally of all the Democratic candidates, and I'll be making thank you calls. There's so many people who have been working so hard over these past months that I want to get right on the phone to thank. And then we look forward on plotting the next few months and really energized to keep moving and sharing my message, my vision for the future.
Well, Sue Minter, thanks very much for taking the time to check in with us today. And again, congratulations on winning the primary.
Thanks so much. And thanks to all of those listeners who voted for me. I look forward to continuing our conversations and building a great Vermont.
Great. Thanks again. Bob Kinzel, she talked about having a tussle with brothers in this campaign. What'd you make of that?
Well, you know, primaries are tough. You have candidates who really have to differentiate themselves on issues. And then all of a sudden after the primary election, you really do have to come together and be united. And so, you know, there weren't a lot of issue differences in this race. They agreed on tax policy for the most part. They also agreed on healthcare reform and generally going in the same direction. So wind really emerged as the big issue. So there are some personality differences, but you would think that it would be pretty simple for these candidates to come together. Now, Peter Galbraith is still very upset about the super PAC money in this race, and he's saying he's going to hold off to support Minter for a little while. But I think for Matt Dunn, very difficult to lose. This is the third time he has lost statewide. It probably means the end of his political career. But he's able to support Sue Minter in the fall election.
Well, and I'm curious, you closely follow the campaigns of both Minter and Phil Scott. And I'm wondering, both of those candidates were graded high on the likability factor in recent polls and both promised positive campaigns. How do you expect their campaigns to be similar or different heading into November?
I think we're going to see some real issue differences between these two candidates. Sue Minter just talked about gun control. That's something that Phil Scott has said there's no reason to change any law in Vermont. We're going to see a different take on the economy. And, you know, it was interesting, Nina, in the VPR Castleton poll, the top issue, bar none, is the economy and
right.
The economic anxiety that Vermonters feel. It was 28%. I think the drug problem in Vermont was at 17, and then things like property tax reform, health care reform were down around 5 or 6%. This is going to be an election, I think, that's determined on the economy. And right now, a lot of folks in Vermont, if we look at the VPR poll, they're not sure they're going to be better off in a year or two than they are right now. It's not an optimistic feeling out there across the state. And so I think the candidate that's able to convey the best policies to support economic development is going to be the winner of this race.
Well, and I think Minter and Scott obviously have ideological differences. I was wondering more stylistically about their campaigns. Do you see the campaign staying positive? Do you think, we're going to start seeing more heavy hitting or more negative campaigns towards November? Do you think their styles of campaigning will switch?
I think we're going to see the styles of the candidates remain pretty positive. I don't see Sue Minter going negative on Phil Scott, and I don't see Phil Scott going negative on Sue Minter. the two of them together. However, there are surrogates in this campaign, and there are other people who make comments, and they're going to be outside groups spending a lot of money. If we thought we saw a lot of money in the primary election, fasten your seatbelt. We're going to see a lot of outside super PAC money in the general election. And those are the folks who are going to bring the negativity to this campaign. But I don't think it'll be the candidates.
Well, you talked about money, and it's just, it struck me how many TV ads I've been seeing in the last week or two for this primary race. And you talked about sort of historic amounts of money being spent. Is it just going to ramp up from here?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw in the primary all candidates combined spending about $5 million. That's enormous. Now, $2 million of that was Bruce Lisman. But, you know, when you talk about seeing all those ads, you had two super PACs spend roughly $200,000 on TV ads over a five-day period. So you had to be running those ads all day long. And that's what I think we're going to start seeing, probably maybe not for a couple of weeks, maybe after Labor Day. But we're going to see these super PACs come in because this is an open seat. The Democrats feel they got a great chance of winning. The Republicans feel they've got a great chance. And those outside groups are going to spend an enormous amount of money. And my guess is that at least half of those super PAC ads are going to be negative.
I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Our very own Secretary of State Jim Condos is on the line, and I wanted to ask him about the final voter tally results that are in. And welcome to Vermont Edition.
Well, good morning, or afternoon, I guess.
You've had a busy couple of days, I'm sure.
Yeah, my elections team and I didn't leave the office last night until 12:30, 1 o'clock, and we're pretty much back in the office at 7:30 this morning, so trying to wrap things up, but we're getting there.
Well, so Secretary Condos, tell us what the final voter tally results are. I'm kind of curious if the projections are right.
Well, we're still waiting on two towns, but for the most part, we just set a record. We've had the most most people vote in a primary in at least 40 years, by our count, definitely more than what happened in 2000 when we had 118,000. We think right now we're close to 119,000 or just a little over 119,000. So the vote total has actually been really, really well, gone really well.
And Secretary, why do you think that the vote turnout was higher? Do you think it had anything to do with moving up the dates, or do you still stick with the fact that it was just an exciting race?
Well, I've been saying right along that I don't think that the earlier date has really had a significant impact. I think it still comes down to the candidates and how competitive the races are. And in this particular year, we had, let me go back. In 2000, which was the most in the last 16 years, we had basically a very competitive Republican governor's race between Bill Muebb and Ruth Dwyer. And then in 2010, we had the five Democrats running for governor in that year. And this year, we had a very competitive race on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat for governor. Plus, we had the added bonus of having a competitive race in the lieutenant governor's race.
So it was something to watch. Well, we'll have to see if the next primary, and actually November's general election, is just as exciting. Jim Condos is Vermont's Secretary of State. Busy guy the last few days. Thanks for taking time to talk with us today.
You're welcome.
If you're just joining us again, we're talking about yesterday's primary election on Vermont Edition today, who won and what it all means for November's big event. VPR's Bob Kinzel is here with me, and we welcome your calls or comments. You can join the conversation at 1-800-639-2211. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Or feel free to post your comments or questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. And we'll check in with GOP primary winner Phil Scott and David Zuckerman, who won the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor, when we come back. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Katkin for Jane Lindholm. And today, VPR's Bob Kinzel and I are going over the ins and outs of yesterday's primary election. What did you think of how it turned out? Are you excited about your choices come November, or maybe not so much? What did you think of the campaigns? 1-800-639-2211 is our number if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can post your thoughts on our Facebook page. So let's shift to the GOP gubernatorial race between Bruce Lissman and Phil Scott. Phil Scott won that race with 60% of the vote compared to Lissman's 40%. Bruce Lissman had an uphill battle against Scott, who was well-known and very well-liked in Vermont. Bob, did the race turn out pretty much as you expected?
It did. You know, it was a tough road for Bruce Lissman. As you mentioned, Phil Scott has served as lieutenant governor for three terms. He was a state senator for five terms. He's a popular race car driver. He is a genuinely liked political figure in the state of Vermont. So for Lissman to spend roughly $2 million of his own money to launch a massive TV ad campaign criticizing Scott was really a gamble. And some people thought it was just a little bit too much. Lissman talked about Scott being a member of Peter Shumlin's cabinet. He's too cozy with Shumlin. He wasn't a strong Republican alternative voice against the administration. And the big one, I think, at the end was that conflict of interest that Lissman says Scott had in terms of his construction company making bids on state contracts. And generally, Lissman attacked Phil Scott's character. It was really blistering in the last 2 weeks or so. And I think a lot of people thought it was too personal, too negative. I think these ads backfired on Lissman. Now, I think it's fair to say it's important to highlight differences with your opponent in a campaign. I mean, that's what elections are all about. But this effort rubbed people the wrong way. And I met a voter yesterday in Montpelier who said they started out as a Bruce Lissman supporter, but over the course of the last few weeks, they decided this stuff, these ads are over the top. They're too negative. They were going to vote and did vote for Phil Scott.
So what do you think, besides the negative ads backfiring and maybe turning people off, what do you think helped push Phil Scott ahead that Phil Scott was touting?
Well, Phil Scott has a positive message on the economy. You know, for the last couple of years, the Republicans have viewed him as the most likely person to run for governor. And so I think there was a lot of Republican support. They see Phil Scott as having a great chance in November. As we said, he's very well liked. He has not necessarily been the alternative voice all the time. He tries to collaborate with people. Now, some people don't like that in political leaders. Other people do. And so for those folks who are thinking, you know, it's time for a change after 6 years of the Shumlin administration, I think the Republicans see Phil Scott as a great candidate.
Listen to this. Heartland in Burlington posted on Facebook, "I foresee a race car driver governor and an old hippie farmer as lieutenant governor. Now that is a real Vermont ticket." Thank you for that, Heartland. Phil Scott is on the line with us now. He is the Republican Party's nominee for governor, switching over from his lieutenant governor job. Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, welcome back to Vermont Edition, and congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate being on.
So did you get a chance to sleep in at all this morning, or were you up and out for that unity breakfast?
No, I was up far earlier than that. I typically get up about 4:45, and I continued to do that today. So a lot to do, and just hit the ground running.
So I want to ask you about that unity breakfast that you attended this morning. The Republican Party nationwide is feeling a bit fractured. How unified is the party feeling in Vermont?
I believe very unified. Went to the breakfast this morning. I had a nice conversation with Bruce Lissman last night on the phone, and then he went to the breakfast this morning. We chatted again, said some very kind things about me, and pledged his support. And I think it went a long ways towards healing some of the wounds that are there. And we'll get beyond this. And I believe that our platforms are very similar. Our message is the same. Our views about the future of Vermont and the economy and the affordability are consistent. So I thought it was great. Our tactics are just different, and we just do business a little bit differently.
Well, one of Bruce Lissman's tactics was pointing out that he felt you were part of the status quo, and that your having been in Montpelier for 16 years was not the kind of change the state needed. Why do you think that message fell short with voters?
Well, again, I think most people that understand the political game or politics understand, but I've been in the minority for 16 years. I didn't have a political bone in my body 20 years ago, had no interest in politics, and then decided to step up and perform my public service and add my voice. And that's what I've done. And I've been able to accomplish a lot, but a lot of it has been trying to collaborate, trying to bring people together, consensus building, because you are in the minority. And there's not much you can do without support from reaching across the aisle. So I've done that successfully, and I believe that I have the respect of many in the legislature on both sides of the aisle. And I think that that's important. You can't get elected in any leadership role or any position and think that you're just going to change things by yourself. It's a collaborative effort, and I think that I'm fairly good at that.
How will your campaign change, do you think, now that Sue Minter is going to be your opponent?
Well, I'm not sure it will change. I've been part of my MO is that I am consistent. I believe that that's what Vermonters want. They want a consistent message. They want somebody steady at the wheel of state government. And they want as well to see some change in terms of the direction. They want more emphasis on the economy. They want to feel more secure in their own lives. They'd like us to address the affordability issues that Vermonters face. So I think that I will continue with that message. I think it's one that resonates because it's true.
One last question. I'm curious, how worried are you that Donald Trump's presence as a Republican on the national ticket may impact your race here in Vermont?
Well, I don't know if it's a concern for myself. It probably was more of a concern during the primary because, as you know, I'm not a supporter of Mr. Trump. And I made that quite clear for the last 6 months and to my detriment in some respects going into a Republican primary. So my feelings haven't changed. I'm going to accept that he's the nominee on the Republican side. But my feelings haven't changed and my position has not changed on Mr. Trump.
Well, Lieutenant Governor, thank you very much for taking time to be on the program today and congratulations on your win.
Well, thank you very much and look forward to speaking to you in the future.
I as well. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck in for Jane Lindholm, and we're talking about the election results from yesterday's primary. Maybe you have some thoughts to share. What did you think of the campaign, and how did you vote, and why? You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211, or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Bob Kinzel joins me today to go over the various results that have been coming in. And one more race that I'd like to ask you about, or another GOP race, Bob, that I'd like to ask you about, was the Senate race in Franklin County, where Norm McAllister was running for another term. McAllister is awaiting trial on felony charges of sexual assault. The Senate had voted to suspend him until after the charges were resolved. Now, he lost yesterday's primary, but Bob, how worried were his fellow senators about that race?
I think there was a huge sigh of relief among Republican senators that Norm McAllister did not win the primary. They were very, very worried about that. And voters in Franklin County overwhelmingly decided not to support his effort to return to the state house. He came in third with about 10% of the vote. This compares to incumbent Dustin DeGree, who got about 37% of the vote, and Carolyn Bradigan, who has served in the House, who got about 33%. So it was a very strong message from the folks in Franklin County. They want nothing to do with Norm McAllister.
So what other Senate and Republican or Senate and House races were you closely following?
Well, it was interesting to see what was going to happen up in Chittenden County because there are two open seats up there. Progressive Chris Pearson running in the Democratic primary, I believe, came in fifth up there. So that would be a good sign for him in the November election. Down here in Washington County, we had a four-way race in the Democratic race, and Francis Brooks, who was a former sergeant-at-arms and represented Montpelier in the Vermont House for many, many years, won, I think, by 6 votes, coming in third. And so the Democrats will have 3 candidates in that race, 1 Republican in that race, that being Bill Doyle, who has served since 1968. And so now it really does set up a lot of races across the state, and there'll be a lot of attention placed on these state Senate races in November.
All right. Well, we'll talk with David Zuckerman coming up and continue our wrap on yesterday's primary election when we come back. This is Vermont Edition. You're listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck, and I'm here with VPR's Bob Kinzel, and we're talking about the results and implications of yesterday's primary election. Bob, let's talk about the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor. There were 3 candidates, former Vermont Speaker of the House Shap Smith, longtime Chittenden County Senator David Zuckerman, and Chittenden County Rep. Keisha Ram. David Zuckerman came out on top with 45% of the vote compared to 38% of Shep Smith and 17% rather for Keisha Ram. Were you surprised by the outcome, Bob?
I thought it was going to be closer, yes. And again, you know, right at the beginning of the program, we talked about voter turnout efforts for Sue Minter and what a fabulous job her campaign did getting out the vote. Same thing for David Zuckerman. He was clearly the best organized candidate in this race. The Progressive Party threw everything they had into this contest. Their get out the vote effort was superb. Their organization skills were excellent. It really paid off because, you know, in this race, we didn't have a lot of issue differences. And so the ground game really became the most important element in the election. And so that made a big, big difference. And then there's the Bernie factor.
Right.
You know, Zuckerman is the only statewide candidate that Bernie Sanders endorsed in his primary election. I think it carried a lot of weight with some voters. Bernie is so popular in Vermont right now. His supporters definitely want to carry on the political revolution that he launched with his presidential campaign. And David Zuckerman, in many ways, is the symbol of that revolution at the statewide level. It's a movement in Vermont. And I look to see Bernie Sanders campaigning for Zuckerman in the general election. And I think the Bernie factor combined with great organizational skills really put Zuckerman over the top.
Mark wrote in an email, I think the implication of Zuckerman's win yesterday is pretty obvious to Shap Smith. The lieutenant governor primary yesterday was a referendum on his time as House Speaker and his record as an establishment, quote unquote, Democrat working with the Shumlin administration these last years. And I'm sure the loss came as a surprise or a shock to Smith. You talked about the Bernie Sanders endorsement, Bob, for David Zuckerman. Some were worried that it came too late, but obviously it did have a lot of power. And you're thinking that that's going to help propel him in November as well.
I think it'll be a very strong factor in November. Now, I've got to say, there's some Democrats who are not thrilled at the idea that a progressive is now the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor. I think it's going to cause some problems within the Democratic Party. There might be some Democrats who say, you know, I just can't vote for a progressive in our party, but do they want to vote for Republican Randy Brock? It's going to set up some problems. But I think it's going to set off this debate within the Democratic Party about what's the future. Because, Nina, what we're seeing this year, particularly in legislative races, is there are, I think, several dozen candidates who are running as progressives in the Democratic primary in their district. In their House districts and in their Senate districts. And so I think it's going to start off this debate about, well, what is the future of the Democratic Party? Should the Democrats embrace the progressives and kind of have this fusion party that moves forward? Or is there going to be some opposition to the fusion party idea? And that'll be something that'll be interesting to watch through the fall election.
Kind of like the Bernie Sanders effect on the national level.
Exactly.
I want to ask you, too, Zuckerman has been a longtime senator from Chittenden County, and he's well-known in that part of the state. But what would you say about him for listeners who may not be as familiar with him as his, you know, key issues that he's really been rallying for over the last decade or so?
Well, he's been a very strong voice for the GMO labeling bill. He's been very strong on family leave. He's been very strong on a single-payer health care plan. In terms of the economy, he reflects what Bernie has talked about, the economic insecurity in this country. I think if he could, he would make a major reform of the tax system so that wealthier people pay a little bit more and that middle-income people pay less, both at the income tax level and also for property taxes. And, you know, I think he did very well. If you look at the Democratic vote, Nina, there are really five counties. If you can carry these five counties or do reasonably well, you are going to win in the primary. And those five counties would be Chittenden, Washington, Windham, Windsor, and Rutland. And I have to believe that David Zuckerman did very well in Burlington, even though Keisha Ram is a representative from Burlington. I have to think he did very well in Windham County. And so he's got some good statewide support, and he's going to be a strong candidate in November.
Well, David Zuckerman is on the line, so I'd like to bring him into this conversation and welcome him. Senator Zuckerman, thanks very much for being on the show, and congratulations.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much for having me.
So while it was a three-way race, your biggest challenge was from a very well-known opponent, Shab Smith. When did you feel like you'd won the primary? When did you realize that was a reality?
Well, let me first compliment Shap and Keisha on tremendous campaigns getting around the state, promoting good values around economic development, our rural economies, our town centers, folks' family challenges with respect to affordable child care, as well as our ongoing challenges with our health care scenario and ways to improve it. And I think all the candidates did a great job of talking about those issues and really working to bring them to the forefront. But, you know, absolutely, I worked throughout the state. My campaign and volunteers worked all over the state to get that message out. Clearly, even prior to Bernie's endorsement, I had been endorsed by him 10 prior times in all of my House and Senate races. And I worked to get that message out about, you know, the quote, Bernie revolution that now so many people around the country are inspired by. And obviously, we have a tremendous core of support throughout Vermont for what Bernie brings to politics, not only issues-based, but also positive. I think nationally, there was clearly discussion about Bernie's tremendous efforts to remain positive throughout the campaign, which, as you look at the national political scenario, and as was talked about earlier on this program, occasionally the in Vermont, but thankfully not often rewarded, negative campaigning was just a place no one really wanted to go.
Well, as I want to ask you, as a progressive running as a Democrat, Bob and I were talking earlier about how that may cause some shifts and how there's sort of a groundswell of that occurring in Vermont. How do you see the unity of the Democratic Party in Vermont playing out?
Well, you know, ultimately, I think the Democratic Party recognizes the broad base of support that's out there as long as we all embrace that potential. You know, progressives and Democrats can stand for very good issues around, you know, much of Bernie's message that we talked about. And I think the Democrats probably recognize that a little bit in this race, that's some of the energy that's out there. And if they want to really thrive and if the Democratic Party really wants to grow and embrace I think these issues, then I think there's a great opportunity for them. And, you know, Shap ran a great campaign. I think clearly he was most of the establishment's candidate. Much of the House leadership got behind him. Many people across the state got behind him. And rightfully so, in some respects. He led the House for a long time through major, major issues. We worked closely on marriage equality, and I know that was a very proud moment for him and other economic development issues. But I think also the Democrats recognize that progressives, because not just myself running the Democratic Party but primary, but folks like Mari Cordes down in Bristol-Lincoln area, folks in Burlington also doing so and across other parts of the state, won many of those primaries. And I think the effort to work together but point out that we could go further, I think, is very clear.
And finally, I'm just wondering, what do you think set you apart from Smith and Rahm that resonated with voters when they went in to cast their ballots? What was it that resonated,
well,
you think?
Well, you know, there were a lot of folks coming up to me asking me a question, both who are you going to vote for in the governor's race, and I'm having a hard time deciding in this lieutenant governor's race. And I think the discussion often revolved around just each of our different experience, what we've brought in the political arena, as well as our personal life experiences. You know, Shap and I both have families. We've both gone through some serious health issues with our spouses, and, you know, so we have some very similar tracks in that regard. You know, Shap is a very steady hand at, you know, working to get things across the finish line, as he talked about, and I talked about how issues sometimes can't get to the finish line unless they're started. And I've been out there sticking my neck out on some pretty significant issues in Vermont over the years, and particularly working with people across the state to help get the political class in Montpelier to eventually support them. And that may have been some of the differences. My historical grassroots work on policy issues came home and helped with the sort of the political process of a primary.
Well, David Zuckerman, I want to thank you very much for being on the program, and congratulations again.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to speaking with you both many times. Looking forward.
I'm sure you'll be back. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kekin for Jane Lindholm. I'm joined with VPR's Bob Kinzel, and we're talking about yesterday's elections, the wrap-up, the final tallies, and what it all means. Let's take a call now. We've got Stuart calling in from Norwich. Hi, Stuart. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, thanks for allowing me to join.
Yeah, go ahead.
And to offer you a different perspective than you've been hearing from the candidates and also from other callers. I can only give you a 50-year personal perspective, having lived in this state for that long and having seen the changes in the political spectrum that have occurred. I truly believe that socialism and Bernie's way and the way that Democrats and progressives have been following is the wrong way. It's the way that will drive people like me and other people out of the state, because I don't want to pay the estate tax. I don't want to continue to pay the personal income tax. I don't see that there's a great value, notwithstanding the beauty of this terrific state, of staying here. You know, you make it impossible for somebody to want to live here. And I just want to voice that contrarian opinion from somebody who's lived here for a very long time, considering the fact that my first job in Vermont was at $1.65 an hour. I worked 70 hours a week to take home $100 a week.
Stuart,
I strongly object to the way that Democrats, progressives, and even Republicans are tending to go in this state. I don't believe that socialism is the way to go. Free enterprise capitalism, although it needs to be regulated, is a much better way than the socialist model that's being proposed and being advocated.
Stuart, I think I'm going to interrupt because I think we've got your point, and I appreciate you bringing that up, and I want to have Bob Kinzel have a chance to weigh in on it. But, you know, it was interesting, Stuart's comments about feeling overly taxed and not really being listened to and being kind of forced out of this beautiful state. Bob Kinzel, you talked about the VPR poll where the economy was concern number one among voters. How much during this whole campaign did you hear taxation issues come up on both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans?
Oh, it came up some, and I think it's going to be a prime issue in the fall campaign because you've got Phil Scott talking about that the state of Vermont needs to live within its means. And he's talking about looking back over the last year, what was the revenue growth? Well, it was around 2%. So he's saying, based on that, that's how much I will increase the budget in the coming year. And so he feels very strongly about that. He says that if the legislature sends him any kind of tax increase, he will veto it. So I think Stewart's concerns really do become the prime issue in the gubernatorial campaign. And Sue Minter is going to be talking about not necessarily raising taxes, but rearranging taxes so that perhaps some wealthy folks might pay more in income taxes, and that might reduce property taxes for other people. And so I think we're going to have two different outlooks on how to improve the Vermont economy. And that whole economic anxiety in the VPR Castleton poll, it spilled over into housing. Half the people in the state of Vermont think that housing is totally unaffordable. And so I think Stewart's concerns then become sort of the lightning rod for this race and become issue number one, without any doubt.
Well, Bob Kinzel, there was a lot to cover. I want to thank you very much for being on the show, lending your insights, as usual, into all the voter results that we've gotten. Thanks for taking time to be on the program today.
My pleasure, Nina.
Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed our program today, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. You can add your thoughts, what did you think of today's program, on our Facebook page or at vpr.net, where the Vermont Edition conversation keeps going and going. From the studios of PEG TV in Rutland, I'm Nina Keck. Thanks for listening.